In September 2012, the ISB decided to focus the new rate regulated activities research project on developing a discussion paper to document different rate regulation regimes and to identify whether any of those rate regulations do create rights or obligations that could satisfy the definition of assets and liabilities within the IFRS conceptual framework. The ISB also briefly discussed whether or not to develop an interim standard to provide some guidance on rate regulated activities until the more comprehensive project could be completed, but we didn't ask you to make a decision on that matter pending some consultation with the IFRS Advisory Council and other outreach activities. At this meeting, we will ask you to make a decision on whether to develop an interim standard or not. But before we do that, I'd like to ask you to briefly consider the proposed project plan for the discussion paper, which I think will provide some context to the decision about the interim standard. So first of all, if I can turn your attention to Agenda Paper 6A, which sets out the issues that we've identified that we think should be considered within the discussion paper. We summarise these various issues in paragraph 8 on page 3 of the paper. There is additional detail expanded on in the appendix, and these issues consider the types of regulation, the definitions of assets and liabilities, and the linking with the conceptual framework, and also other issues relating to recognition, measurement, presentation, and disclosure. So, I open up the floor now to ask for any comments you might have or any additional issues you think we should be addressing in the discussion paper.
Paul? Jane, I just have one question. When, and maybe this is premature because it's part of your paragraph 8A, what do we mean by rate regulation? But are we only talking about cost of service rate regulation? Or is it more? I mean, I'd imagine that every jurisdiction around the world regulates rates in some ways, but I thought, you know, the scope of our project is limited to those where cost recovery is an issue. So that's my question.
Yeah, I think what we need to consider is what should be the scope of the project or any subsequent guidance that we issue. The exposure draft issued in July 2009 was focused very much on cost of service type of regulation, but we had lots and lots of comments within the comment letters that we got, and many people considered that was too narrow a scope. We did have quite a lot of people thought it was too broad a scope, so we need to do quite a bit of work to identify what do we actually mean by this.
Okay, so we haven't yet decided. Good, that's fine.
Patricia?
Two similar questions. One is, are we going to think about how much regulation is necessary to get into the project? Does that, in thinking about what types of rate regulation, are we going to think about how much regulation? And my other question is, to what extent will definition of a customer be an issue, and maybe that's something that we think about after we've decided what regulatory regimes we're dealing with. But I remember in some of our subsequent debates about the exposure draft, the 2009 exposure draft, one of the big issues was unit of account and what is a customer.
Yeah. I think the both of those questions, I think, will come naturally out of the research that we do, but certainly the definition of a customer and the unit of account, I think we do, yeah, we perhaps should be more explicit about dealing with that because it was a big issue with the exposure draft.
As to the list of topics to be discussed, isn't there also to look at what happens if a system discontinues, if you are regulated and then there is a change in legislation, how do you deal with those assets and liabilities which have been in so far recognized? When do you derecognize those assets and when do you do that?
Yeah.
Okay. Just one other point. It's kind of related to Patricia's observation. You have it embedded in I think, paragraph 17 where you talk about the kind of information that investors are interested in. but, and I can share this report with you, but having read some research from various firms looking at the investment, you know, prospects of public utilities, at least in the states, I don't know whether this is the case outside the state, a big concern is about how companies actually go about recovering their costs. What's the process? And so the ability to recover costs, in my mind, is at the heart of whether or not you can book an asset, because it's one thing to say a regulatory framework creates a distinct kind of business model that might, in theory, give rise to an intangible. But then if it doesn't translate, into an actual ability to recover costs, if that's not possible, I think there's a disconnect. So you might have an asset, but it might be this big, so to speak, in which case it's inconsequential. So I think there's a presumption here that recognition of the asset means that you're going to get a significant number on the balance sheet. I don't know whether or not that is a presumption that necessarily is going to follow.
I certainly think it's not a presumption that I would have, and it's part of the research into what is the nature of the regulation. And again, something in the 2009 ED, the scope was set so that it was a particular type of regulation. There was no separate recognition criteria established because it was presumed the particular type of regulation did automatically lead to a recovery. Again, there were big question raised about that in the comment letters to the ED.
Right.
So that's, again, something that's implicit in looking at what is the type of regulation.
We'd also expect to look at the rights and obligations that are established in order to then lead us on to the asset liability recognition side of things.
Stephen?
One of the problems in this project, I feel, is that it seems to be one thing or the other. It's either it is an asset or it isn't an asset. And, you know, clearly there's something going on as economic consequences. And I just wonder whether we shouldn't just think whether there are other ways in which we can portray the effect of this rather than on balance sheet, off balance sheet. I don't know. I haven't got an idea, but, you know, should there be two balance sheets? Should there be a separate section in the income statement? Should we have a special note one disclosure? There's all sorts of things that perhaps we could do to better reflect this activity. And I wouldn't want us just to go down the route of let's decide whether it is or isn't an asset.
Yeah, and I think that reflects some of the ideas or thinking that we've got that, yes, there is information, there's useful information that needs to be communicated about the effects of rate regulation. So one of the challenges and one of the things that I think we need to look at through this discussion paper is what is the most effective way of presenting that information? Is it through things that are actually in the financial statements themselves, in the balance sheet and the income statement, or is it in the notes or elsewhere?
Can I go? Now, we publish ED and the feedback divided geographically. My question to you is, you know, of course we can have a lot of outreach and information from some of the North American states or countries. But how will you investigate those countries who have already moved to us, which have already abolished their traditional regulatory accounting?
I think with those, we approach them in very much the same way as those countries that are already or are currently recognizing regulatory assets and liabilities. Our approach to the discussion paper is to try and identify the nature of the rate regulation itself. So approaching regulators, approaching preparers of financial statements to identify what it is they're subject to as a separate question to how do they account for that.
Jan?
I have just a tiny thinking here, which is perhaps not correct, I don't know, but this project will to some extent impact the conceptual framework. And I mean, as Steve pointed out, we have either black or white, and the problem we've had here is really to say, do we have assets, do we have liabilities or not? And we are then entering into this very complicated but important part of what is an asset and what is a liability. I can imagine that there are neighboring things to this one. And I think when we make the discussion paper, it would be very useful if we fully understood how this fits into the conceptual framework thinking, and if we have other similar situations, somehow we must be able to address them before we then take some sort of a decision.
Yeah, certainly this project is running alongside the conceptual framework project, and the two project teams are talking to each other constantly. So as the thinking on the definitions of assets and liabilities and presentation in financial statements develops, we're linking in with that.
But I mean, as soon as I get a contract with an authority for distributing electricity or water, whatever it is, I have an intangible value, most likely. And I have, in other situations, I have other similar intangibles. So in all of a sudden, we are sitting here saying, okay, are we opening up this now for intangibles in a wide sense, in a narrow sense? And how do we limit this?
Those are the tricky questions.
Yes, but I think if we were to say that at the same time we're solving the conceptual framework, I think we have to at least think through a little bit on how it fits in.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I think we can move on to the next question.
I think so. Thank you. So, the next paper is paper 6B, looking at the proposed project plan. This outlines our proposals for the discussion paper, first of all. And we do note that the ISB's due process requirements do specify that for a major project of which rate-regulated activities would be considered, the ISB normally establishes a working group. However, we're not recommending the formation of a separate working group for this project, primarily because, as Jan has just said, the interaction with the conceptual framework project is such that we recommend that we use the conceptual framework's consultative groups rather than setting up a separate group, so that group will be aware of what's going on in the conceptual framework and the interaction with this project. So we ask the question at paragraph 10 of paper 6B, whether you agree with that recommendation.
Patricia?
Peter, correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought the conceptual framework wasn't going to have a consultative group. I thought it was going to rely on the the new standard setters group that's going to be formed.
That's what it's saying.
Yeah. And that is what is being proposed.
Yep.
Pardon me?
And that is what is being proposed as...
Well, it doesn't exactly say that. It says it's going to rely on the consultative group as if there's going to be a balanced group of input rather than just standard setters. Ordinarily, when we have a consultative group, there are users represented and preparers and regulators, etc. And the consultative group that's being used for the conceptual framework is just standard setters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had the same observation in that when you gave the list of people here early in your paper, there's no mention of any kind of investor groups. Is it implied in paragraph 9 that you're gonna talk to, I guess, investors or investor groups?
Yeah, I mean, our intention is that we would do outreach activities and not just focus on this, but we just felt that trying to get a consultative group together, partly in the time frame and also partly to focus on so many different aspects. There's the rate regulation itself, there's the interaction with the definition of assets and liabilities, there will be the needs of users, and we've spoken to a couple of user groups already, but our intention would be to come back to these groups, but not necessarily bringing them all together in one consultative group.
Paul?
This is the only piece of the staff pitch of recommendations that I don't support. I think we need a group of experts on regulated activities here. Obviously, there's the issue of what is an asset, and the conceptual framework group or the new broad standard setters advisory group can help in that regard. But I really think that this is so specialized that we would benefit from expertise. Maybe they don't ever need to meet. You know, they can work by email as some of our other groups do. But I'm not sure you'll get all the advice you need from conceptual framework generalists.
Yes, I agree with the parent proposed that, you know, we need to develop another consultative group, because the reason is, you know, this kind of a national standard setter is the objective of that forum is a kind of a promote and coordinate, you know, the our IFRS is a development. So this issue is quite sensitive issue, as Weigl said, you know, this is kind of regional debate possible. So if we just introduce the new forum of all the national state sectors, we are driving them to, you know, discuss hot topic. You know, maybe there will be some kind of a division among these national state sectors. But we need, you know, more comprehensive support from national state sectors. So we better put this issue into more professional consultative group. That is more, we need a bigger, ambitious, you know, objective of this, of the National Standards Forum. So I'd like to say that another thing is, I was not there, you know, but basically all the comments from this project and the 2009 ED, that I guess there are two opinions. One is conceptually maybe is not satisfactory to recognize the assets of liability. Another thing is a regional, you know, some kind of interest, you know. If you want to recognize this asset as a cost of service in regulation, how about the others, you know? That others, you know, maybe some companies in the Europe, they have a totally different from regulation, but there is some kind of benefits by this regulation or some government policy. So that's the main issues. Because they thought, you know, it's quite reasonable to recognize assets, but including their regulatory assets too. So that's some major issues. So, you know, these are, you know, conflict, debatable politically, you know, so I strongly recommend to use other consultative groups.
I fully support Paul. I think the danger of this project is the scope and the complexity of the practice. And I don't think it's enough to just use the advisory forum, which we will establish. Of course, at conceptual level, they can discuss, use the regulatory debate as a good example to draw a conclusion. But we do need experts in this area. And as I understand, the schemes are evolving, regulatory system are evolving.
Well, I think there seems to be a consensus here that probably the advisory forum is not sufficient. Mm-hmm. It can cover the more conceptual questions. If we do need, it's so specialized and technical that we probably need to establish for the consultative group. I think it's a reasonable conclusion.
Okay. Moving on then, in paragraph 39 of paper 6B, we've set out a tentative timetable for the development of the discussion paper. However, before we ask for your comments on this, we do need to ask you to make a strategic decision as to whether to develop in parallel with the discussion paper an exposure draft for an interim standard, which could perhaps provide some sort of grandfathering of existing policies for rate-regulated activities until the more comprehensive project is being completed. As I mentioned earlier, we did have a brief discussion of this at the September board meeting. The outcome of the consultation with the IFRS Advisory Council and others is summarised in paragraphs 14 through 16 of the paper. Although this does note that the majority did not support an interim standard, there was a notable minority that did very strongly support it. We've also received a letter dated the 10th of December 2012 from the Canadian Securities Administrators Chief Accountants Committee, and we've included that as agenda paper 6C for the meeting today. Having said there was a majority against the interim, but a strong minority for it, by far the strongest message we got from both parties was that any interim solution, if one is developed, shouldn't delay the timetable for the major project, because there was a lot of support for the major project. It is an area of uncertainty and concern. However, trying to develop an interim within a time constraint like that does really limit the type of interim standard that could be developed. So consequently, we set out our recommendation in paragraphs 23 to 24 for a style of interim standard if one is to be developed. And we highlight some of the benefits and risks of this type of solution from paragraphs 25 through 34 with some mitigating factors in 35-37. And our recommendation is, if an interim is to be developed, it allows grandfathering for those entities that are currently recognising regulatory assets and regulatory liabilities. But we would put some restrictions around the presentation of those items to try and isolate the impact so that the rest of the financial statements do show the figures as any non-regulated entity would show under the requirements of IFRS. We do think this is a strategic decision for the board, so at this point I'll stop and invite your comments.
I have a question before we can move to the decision. In the notion of grandfathering, it means that what you do today, you can continue. Some companies, some jurisdictions probably have currently reasonable accounting standards, which are acceptable. And continuing might not be a problem. But are we sure that there are not somewhere some very unreasonable type of accounting practices that could also be grandfathered as a result of grandfathering all existing accounting practices? You made a comparison to IFRS 4 and 6. It seems to me that in IFRS 4 and 6, we have grandfathered existing accounting to the extent that it was not unreasonable. And some IFRS 4, some practices have been excluded in a way. At the time we issued IFRS 4, 6 also can be seen as not permitting anything to continue. So what is the risk in a general grandfathering type of requirement?
Well, I think there's always a risk that there may be some practices out there that we haven't been able to identify so far. Our recommendation with this sort of grandfathering with some restrictions attached to it is following along the lines of IFRS 6. And trying to, if not eliminate some of these practices where we may not be sure that they're perhaps the highest quality, at least trying to isolate the impact and highlight the impact by pulling these items all together as to a single line item with sufficient disclosure to identify exactly what the policy is.
Patricia?
I support the staff recommendation to develop an interim standard. In particular, I believe the benefits outweigh the risks. Not only do I agree with the benefits outlined by the staff in paragraphs 26 through 29, I don't agree that issues outlined in paragraph 32-34 are a significant deterrent to moving forward with an interim standard. In fact, I view the potential reduction of external pressure to develop a comprehensive solution quickly as a good thing, making it more likely that the board develops a high-quality answer. And further, I don't believe that grandfathering existing local GAAP will cause confusion or increase a barrier to comparison between entities. That confusion and barrier already exists. The disclosures the staff envision in the interim solution will, in fact, reduce the confusion and improve comparability. So I'm very much in favor of this interim solution.
But just to be sure, the staff made no recommendation. It just asked a question.
It said you agreed with the staff recommendation.
Well, no, well, they said if a proposal for an interim standard is to be developed, do you agree with grandfathering? And yes, okay. I do.
All right. Oh, that's.
It's indirect.
Yeah. It's, yeah. If you decide that's the route to go ahead, that's the route we would recommend.
Yeah.
I have expressed earlier that I have doubts about this, and but in the end I can live with it, with a decision whatever direction we go, so it's not something that will be very difficult. As I've understood this, we will have the key decisions made 2015 as we publish our conceptual framework, and most likely we'll have a standard on this 2016. So that's an assumption for me thinking about this. I then understand that this is about 35 Canadian companies. And I think we are making a little bit of a big thing for these 35, or whatever it is, Canadian companies. I'm worried a little bit along the line of Philippe here, that in all of a sudden we come with a lot of surprises. And perhaps I'm wrong now, perhaps you have raised this question before, so perhaps you have better information. I sort of saw in front of me a private company using this grandfathering based on that in their country they allow regulatory assets and liabilities. And they prepare then a financial statement according to IFRS with this grandfathering. And if that is a possibility, I think we are doing a mistake by allowing this. Is that the case?
I haven't seen anybody recognising the regulatory assets and liabilities within IFRS and claiming compliance with IFRS.
No, but I mean, if I got it right, in a number of countries they allow regulatory assets and liabilities to be accounted for according to their local GAAPs.
Yeah.
Is there any restriction then for someone to use this grandfathering, prepare a statement and get it audited and say it's in according to IFRS with this grandfathering?
Yes.
Yes. No, restriction in that we're not proposing that this would be limited only to publicly listed entities. What we're proposing would be for those entities preparing IFRS financial statements.
Yeah. So they could apply it. Yeah. So we could have a mixture of things here. And I think that is not very good.
Can I respond to that? Yeah. Well, Jan, I take your point, but I think the real point is we don't know the answer. We've had one go. I mean, you're kind of making an assumption that those people who are picking up assets are doing the wrong thing. But I don't think we know that yet. We couldn't get to an answer on the last project. We've got a good plan here for getting on with the new project, but we don't know yet what the answer is. And this was very much like insurance or exploration. There's a number of different ways of doing it out there, and different jurisdictions have decided differently what's right and what's wrong. Now, if you take Brazil, for instance, they've decided you shouldn't have the assets and liabilities. But other jurisdictions may not decide that. So we can't presume that taking up these assets and liabilities is wrong until we've finished our project.
No. My worry about an interim standard is that today people can pick and choose.
Well, but they have to apply our concepts and our principles.
No. They can use this grandfathering
and live with it.
They get away with it. So I can be if.
But I assume their financial reports have to show a true and fair view and whatever other principles there are. So they're not just loose.
Sure. But I mean, they can use it.
Sure, but that's because we don't know the answer. How can we say it's wrong for them to do it?
Well, I think it's confusing that we opened up like that.
Jan, our proposals would include disclosure requirements for all entities that are preparing IFRS financial statements that are subject to rate regulation. And so our proposals would be that those entities that are grandfathering existing practices, moving on to IFRS, would then separately show the effects of that rate regulation to the extent that it's reflected in assets and liabilities or in the income statement, so that then comparisons can be made with those.
I accept that. I mean, my starting point of this is that I, for example, have been seeing in a number of countries, people have told them, we have just one solution. You read the book and you apply it. And a country was mentioned now, Brazil, for example, where they've taken a big fight for not allowing people to do it. And now we do this exception for Canada. And I think I don't like it, but I will accept it if the majority says so. But I think it's...
I have 2 points. First one is I don't view this as an exception for Canada. For one thing, I have not written off the United States as being an IFRS adopter even in the next few years. And it's going to be just as much an issue there as in Canada. But my other point is I think Philippe touched on a very important point that we need to think about the risks. And you've got 2 or 3 paragraphs. You say, well, the way we'll deal with the risks is better presentation and disclosure. But actually what we did in IFRS 6, we didn't want to address oil and gas accounting and talk about full costing. But what we just said, do what your national GAAP has been allowed you to do. But we added a very important point. We said you must test for whatever cost you've got on the left side of your balance sheet every year. You've got to test those for impairment. And we've said that for the oil companies. And I think one way to deal with Philippe's point, and I think it's a good one, is to, as part of our interim standard, to remind people you've got to test any asset you've got for impairment, just like any other long-lived asset.
But these are IFRS preparers, right? So they'd be subject to that standard
yeah.
that he's talking about? Yeah. So it's embedded in the...
Yeah.
Well, it was...
In IFRS 6, it's explicit,
it's
so
explicit.
We could do something similar.
It's embedded. If you give a... That's the whole point, Pat, of issuing IFRS 6 and IFRS 4, for that matter, was without that, people would be forced to go to the conceptual framework and very likely conclude these don't meet the definition of an asset. And so just because of this embedding, we had to issue 4 and 6 to make it explicit. I think we should do the same here.
For Amaro, this might be a bit amargo.
I can't even give him a cat.
Which means bitter in Portuguese.
Yes. My name is bitter in Italy, Italian. So
that's right.
Yeah. So it's all bitter. I have a few questions and express a few concerns. So Ian rightly pointed out we don't know the answer. He mentioned this a number of times. And this brought to me, concern about 2 things. First is the term of the letter sent by the security regulators in Canada. Because in the first 2, 3, in the 4th paragraph, in the very end, they say, in our view, an interest standard for rate regulators' activities that only impose disclosure requirement and does not permit the recognition measurement of regulatory assets and liabilities would not address the concerns of many Italian entities with rate-regulated entities.
Exactly.
So this meant to me, even if I translate to Portuguese, that they would only accept as the final result the recognition of assets and liabilities.
Yeah.
So this is, for me, it's a huge concern. The second is, as you pointed out in paragraph 7, and I was attending the advisory council. Well, it's well described here, but the third bullet, members warned against the policy of adopting an interim solution whenever a major standard setting project is activated. In particular, grandfathering existing practices could be opening a Pandora's box, or, in other words, a precedent. And my concern here is also, would be the case in the near future for us to be discussing similar issue when we are developing a project to change things? I have another question to you, paragraph 27, when you talk about grandfathering and considering the timetable. What would be our response to jurisdictions eventually adopting IFRS in 1st of January 2013? So I've learned during this process that there was no inconsistency in application of IFRS for these industries. And someone mentioned Brazil, and Jan mentioned that it was a painful discussion. And it was at the end of the day, not agreed by the regulator, not agreed by the security supervisor, but it was, Brazilians were convinced that this was the consistent answer to IFRS, because there was no rate regulatory assets. And they even sent to us, or at least commented to me and others, that they would like to use temporarily our exposure draft ideas in Brazil. And they were convinced not to do so, or they did. They decided at the end of the day not to carve out and follow IFRS, because although they still believe there are regulatory assets, the regulators do believe, they prepare a reconciliation and publish and disclose that between the regulatory assets and IFRS figures. Although they still believe there are regulatory assets, they prefer to wait for the end of the project. So that said, and I take your word at inception, this is a strategic decision. I am, I guess, in the same position as Jan. I feel very strongly discomfort with regards to an interim as suggested, considering all this aspect, but I can live with it. But this will be tough.
Okay.
Amaro raised the point that I wanted to make in the unsolicited comment letter we received in paper 6C, that the authors of that letter have mentioned that they want recognition and measurement also to be addressed, and not just disclosure. Just for the record, if you followed my decision or my voting in the previous one, I support an asset and a liability. Okay, so I am in that camp of an asset and a liability. Having said that, I just feel that without understanding the scope and the unit of account, I think the interim standard would be so, it's not as tight as the insurance and the oil and gas. I went back and looked at the scope and the objective of both of them. It's well contained. Here, a few minutes ago, we were talking about it. How much of rate regulation do we need to incorporate to be within the scope of the standard? And what is the unit of account? We struggle with that. For example, I understand in certain companies in Canada, cost of conversion of IFRS, cost of conversion to IFRS is a cost they can recover from their constituents at a later stage. What kind of accounting are we trying to grandfather here, okay, without really fully deliberating? I think this will set a dangerous precedent. 4 and 6 are, I can easily articulate why they are different. I'm honestly worried that it will not be the only one, and it might undermine our standard setting process, because we are putting cart before the horse kind of a situation. And I would have supported the idea of interim standard if our project line was not as aggressive as it is. If we are going to come out with the standard next 5 or 10 years, then we need to address something today. I don't know what good does an interim standard do other than somebody trying to say that they are IFRS compliant. It's just like, you know, painting something and just saying that I'm IFRS compliant because I'm grandfathered. Other than that, I don't see any use in making this. So I think on balance, I don't really like this interim standard idea.
Stephen?
I've got a few questions. So this standard would only be available for use by companies that have not already adopted IFRS. Yes. So those companies in Canada that have made the switch, they won't be able to go back to their old rate-regulated accounting?
That's our recommendation, yeah.
And have we got some assurance from Canadians that that's okay? I mean, it would be silly to issue this thing and then they turn around and say, well, that's not enough. I mean, we have to be honest that we're doing this. It's a Canadian issue. I mean, maybe the US, but I think that's highly unlikely. I don't believe there's any other jurisdiction that's in the pipeline to adopt IFRS that has rate-regulated accounting?
India, for example.
India have done a guidance note, which is based very much on our old ED, but with modifications to it. But yeah, it is a big issue for India as well.
But given the timetable that we have to finalise the project, maybe it's a possibility for India, but it seems to me that it's essentially a Canadian issue.
Yeah. I mean, with the timetable, obviously we can feel reasonably confident with the timetable for issuing the discussion paper. We are far less confident as to what happens after that point in time, given the reaction to the exposure draft in 2009. So we are very tentative about what happens after the discussion paper, because there is no guarantee that there will be consensus developing around the world. But that's one of the reasons we're issuing the DP rather than going straight to a second exposure draft, just because there is so much uncertainty as to the outcome.
We all know how good our time is.
Are you suggesting that we may not be able to finalise the standard on rate regulated?
I would hope that we would be able to finalise it.
I mean, I'd be thinking completely unacceptable to do this interim standard and then let it sit there for
It will be the case.
The feedback we got from the Advisory Council and others is that, you know, this is an issue that there is a big desire to get to a final answer for.
But, Stephen, that's up to the board at the end of the day. If we want to push this project ahead quickly, we can. I think a genuine point's being made that there are really difficult questions to be answered, and you can't guarantee that you'll answer all those questions in a timely fashion.
Thinking of difficult questions. So this interim standard, would it include disclosures? I heard you say that it would.
Yeah.
How are we on earth we're going to decide on disclosures in one session? I mean, it's a complicated subject in terms of recognition and measurement, but it's equally as complicated, surely, in terms of disclosure.
And scope.
Scope is certainly one of the issues that we intentionally were recommending that we define a tight scope, because that was attempted in the exposure draft, and to be honest, it failed miserably. The scope in the exposure draft generated so many questions in the comment letters that came back, which is why one of our recommendations is, if we're going to get this out quickly, is to just try and scope it in terms of people that are, or companies that are already recognising regulatory items, and trying to get the disclosures around those entities that are going to carry on recognising those. We do have a reasonable basis for a starting point within Canada. They have a separate standard in their pre-changeover gap that requires quite comprehensive disclosures. The project team, we're already starting to look through several sets of financial statements to try and identify good types of disclosures and try and build on that. So, you know, we are hopeful we can get the main decisions to push out an exposure draft quickly within one decision-making session, but obviously that may not be possible.
And just to go back to my first point, are we confident that Canada is okay with this approach? I mean, my preference would have been for them to have sold it themselves by saying to these Canadian utilities, adopt IFRS except for you can carry on doing this for rate regulated. I mean, the disadvantage with that, I guess, it is that when we come to issue a final standard, and if it is there are no regulatory assets and liabilities, that there's a risk that those Canadian companies will persuade them to stick with their exception. At least by doing this, you know, so the way I get comfortable with this is that by putting this in place, it means that we get those companies on IFRS so that when we make a final decision, automatically they have to accept that decision. Or do they?
They won't.
Do they then ask for a carve-out?
Yep,
I mean,
will.
Do we end up doing all of this and then getting actually in a no better place?
That's my point.
We don't know, do we?
I mean, you've identified and described the main advantage of going down this route. Not only that, to the extent that there could be others elsewhere that would want to take advantage of this and adopt IFRS, then we're also bringing them on the same basis, and therefore greater comparability that way. And as Jane has described, you know, there are things that we can make use of, work that's already been done in the past, such as the disclosures that have been used previously, for example, by Canadian companies, in order to bring to you a proposal at the January meeting with the intention of moving forward quickly on an interim standard.
So these disclosures would affect, I don't know, French utility companies?
Indeed, because
should we give more than 60 days in that case? I mean, this could be a significant change to the reporting of utilities around the world that don't apply currently apply rate regulated accounting.
That's a good point.
Maybe one of the issues to consider is whether the disclosures are minimal for those entities that are not recognising regulatory assets and liabilities, but would be more substantial for those that are.
It would be relatively substantial, and they are not disclosing much today, and that could be a significant change. I think Steve has a very good point here.
Stephen, our expectation is to propose a 120-day comma period for the interim exposure draft.
Okay.
So I thought you just said 60 days.
I did, my mistake.
60 is too short.
Doug?
Yes, thank you. I support staff's presentation, staff's recommendation, but the Amaro pointed out a very good point, which was raised in the advisory council, that is about the opening the Pandora's box. So my fear is other jurisdictions could imitate these tactics when they won't join the IFRS, and we have to prevent such things to occur. And in order to do that, we need to provide some condition to provide this type of interim standard. Otherwise, if we just provide interim standard only for the Canada without showing what is the condition, then it could be a very good precedent. So what we have to do is to provide interim standard is good now. However, we have to provide condition at the same time. Perhaps this time, I think we can live with this interim standard is because we are going to tackle a conceptual framework at the moment, concurrently. And also, we have decided that we are going to start discussion paper. And also, now it is the transition period that many jurisdictions are joining to IFRS. And actually, Canada and could be U.S. is the very large jurisdiction. So we need to provide such kind of condition. Otherwise, we are going to open up Pandora's box.
The one issue that hasn't been discussed and that I have thought about based on my past experiences, if you in fact do not permit this, as we know, as Amaro made it very clear to us, the regulators in Canada will take the matter into their own hands. But thinking from the perspective that let's say they didn't and we eliminated regulatory assets and liabilities, as Ian said, we don't have a track record here of necessarily coming out with standards, you know, exactly on time. You go 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years of not recognizing regulatory assets and liabilities. The market gets used to that. Investors who are accustomed to thinking of these companies in that context get used to that. And then you then propose a change that, in fact, recognizes them. That, in my mind, is the worst of all worlds. So I would much rather have investors who are accustomed to using financial information, which they apparently, in this particular case, think is got some decision usefulness, continue to use that information until we come to a solid conclusion, and then we make a change. So I'm firmly in the camp of moving forward with the interim solution. I have some concerns about how speedily we will resolve this, but I think it's in the best interest of investors to have consistency here and comparability within that marketplace rather than moving back and forth.
Well, I must say that I find this a very difficult decision. There are pros and cons, and they were both listed. by many of you. I am on balance willing to go ahead with this and to issue an interim standard. It might not be such a bad idea to put some kind of a time horizon on it to prevent it from becoming eternal and giving ourselves a little bit of a date that we really have to respect. I would also say if we do this, and it is true that we are doing this with a very clear view on what's happening in Canada, that if in the end we would make a decision not to recognize these assets and liabilities, I would find it extremely disappointing if Canada would not apply that and would create an exception after all, or carve out after all. In this, there is something like noblesse oblige here. If we're going to do this, then we understand, or we would be, it would be very reasonable for us to expect our constituents to accept the results, whatever they may be. Wego?
I will be willing to accept an interim solution that is disclosure only. If we want to go the other way wrong, another way, I will dissent again. For the foreign reasons, not technical, because I highlight my opinions in my dissent opinion on the previous ED already. The first one, I should let you all understand, you know, long time ago when FSB passed this kind of standards, the vote is 3-2. The two board members against was the chairman and the founder of the conceptual framework, Robert Sprouse. And secondly, you know, here we say that, you know, we use six insurance or the abstract industry as a basis. I accept the summary in the paper and the some of the opinions expressed by SEC members. It's a different. You know, when we publish six, you know, our standards are not comprehensive, not solid enough, nor will accept it. We now come into a different stage, totally different stage. It's one decade after. And thirdly, we already, you know, admit long time ago, there is no significant divergence practice, and staff emphasized in the paper. The only reason why we create divergence is what a few countries are not willing to move to. If we want to, you know, have such a compromise, I with Amalo, it is so unfair to any other big countries. You know, China experienced painful process for a long time. When I was a chief accountant, I had to challenge it with the lawmakers. My chairman challenged me, why would we want them to change? And the company pay tremendous cost, millions of costs to transit. I should tell you, one Chinese company went to one of the big markets. The question from debt regulators, how many questions? Over 2,000 questions. A lot of them related to the previous regulatory regime. And the company went through the process. And now we tell them, you're wrong.
No.
Please. What I want to say is, for so many years, we have consensus. And this is why we come to the end. In our world, as staff pointed out, no significant divergence. And I'm not sure whether staff can point it out, any particular jurisdiction in our world still use such kind of methodology. You know, fourth, you know, as other board members already pointed out, the possible negative consequence, and I don't want to highlight some of them, and some of them already mentioned in the summary of the SEC report. And staff proposed to have one line, the presentation plus disclosure. I noticed Porcelli once mentioned in the conclusion, said, oh, disclosure not so easy, it will be complicated. And also, I will feel hard to imagine one line will be easier. True. And we propose to have one session to finish all the discussions. You know, Porcelli from Canada, he view not easier. And we feel it's easier to do so for only one session. I don't know whether it is reasonable or which side is reasonable or not. And next one relate to the Filippo and other mentioned. Staff want to propose to have disclosure of the entities who is already in our board. And also it is hard to accept such kind of idea. And this means, you know, if someone have disease, we ask the whole world or other people to take the medicine. And it's hard to, you know, for me to accept. And finally, how we can account for our annual decision? You know, we put ED, and the ED the view is so obvious. It's split geographically. And previously, we have our effect decision for a few times. And also, we had SEC meeting discussions. And as I understand, most of the SEC members not favor to do so. And how can we account for from the accountability or governance point of view? So if we want to do so, I will dissent again.
Paul? I think disclosure-only approach may sound appealing, but I don't think it works. What are you going to disclose? Are you going to say to a company, continue doing whatever you did under your national GAAP, but disclose it, in which case you have grandfathering? Or are you going to say in the standard, you're not permitted to capitalize any of this stuff, and you must disclose, in which case you've solved the project? So I don't think disclosure only works.
And that was the context that Paul Cherry was summarizing when they were talking about a disclosure standard being very difficult. It was a disclosure standard that didn't actually address the question, do you recognize or not recognize?
No, my first choice is Nessie.
Martin?
Yeah. I'm against an interim standard because I think that is not a technical issue because we don't solve a technical issue and we ask for advice, especially from the advisory council, and the advice which we have asked certain groups was very clear not to doing that, and I think that is not a discussion regarding technical issues, it is a kind of how constituency do we do a favor or not. And we had clear advice from external or from advisory bodies what we should do.
Philippe?
I can support an interim standard that would grandfather the existing accounting where permitted by local GAAP, and not in absence of local GAAP. I would not permit any company to start recognizing assets and liabilities if they don't have local GAAP that already gives some guidance to it. I would also require that those assets and liabilities be clearly identified and disclosed. I would not put too much burden on the ones who do not recognize any assets and liabilities and start asking them a lot of disclosures that they did not provide so far because they have no assets or liabilities to recognize. So I would not try to do some form of a pro forma accounting for those that do not have assets and liabilities under IFRS. So let's be careful about what we require from the rest of the world that it will go said if you have an illness, don't ask all the world to have to take treatment. So be careful about it. I would not characterize assets and liabilities as being an illness in this case, but I would not put too much pressure on the ones that do not have such assets.
Can I see who is ready to support an interim standard with elements of grandfathering?
Nine.
Okay.
No,
just if
there's any other questions, I'll take it. Okay. Thank you. All right, thank you. We reconvene at 1:30. Yes.